There we are. Hey, everybody, welcome into the first ever episode of the Games Reviews Podcast. I'm Joe Ryan, your host, sort of, and joining me today are Matt Grauka.
Hello.
Charles Battersby.
Hello, this is Charles Battersby.
And Dio, the best man from Greece that I have ever met on TeamSpeak.
Hello, guys.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
Well, thank you.
I'm spectacular-rific.
Sounds good. I'm all right myself.
All right. I think we're going to kick it off, as many people do, with a little bit of what you've been playing. We'll go through more or less one at a time here. And I want to hear from Charles first. What have you been playing, Charles?
Oh, well, I've been playing Metal Gear Solid 3D on my 3DS lately.
Nice.
And this is a game that was... Nice. Yeah, it's arguably the best of the franchise so far.
Arguably from me as well, I would say.
And it came out originally in 2003, and last year they released a 3D version of it for the 3DS.
I have to ask, how well did the controls work on the 3DS? I have not played the 3DS version, but I would be keen to.
Well, if you don't have the optional second thumbstick, it plays terribly. If you have to... I just have to be honest. If you don't have that optional second thumbstick, then the camera control is mapped to the buttons on the front, the 3DS.
Right.
So it's similar to Peace Walker, then.
I haven't played that one, so okay. I don't know how they do it. I found it almost impossible to play without my Circle Pad Pro. But if you use the Circle Pad Pro, it actually enhances the control so that it's even better than the original version on the old PlayStation.
Nice. Hey, that sounds good. I might have to try this now. I'm a fan of 3. As people will come to find out, listeners, you will learn that of all the Metal Gears, Metal Gear 3 is the best, and Matt will tell you otherwise, and I will tell you why he is wrong.
I don't disagree that it was one of the best. I just always found that the story was too isolated. What you've got to kind of understand is the context. I played Metal Gear Solid when it first came out, and I played Metal Gear Solid 2 when it first came out, and I was jumping onto Game FAQ's forums and spending probably about 8 hours every day discussing this franchise. And from the moment they announced Metal Gear Solid 3, we all thought that finally we were going to understand the ending to Metal Gear Solid 2. And then they didn't even mention it.
Well, it was a nice thought,
for those
though.
Of you at home who don't know, so it's a prequel to the entire franchise where you're playing the original villain to the first games.
You know, I feel like if you spend any time trying to break down how the story of Metal Gear works, it's pointless. I mean, that thing makes no sense. We're going to be here all day. Hey, I love it, but come
well,
on.
Well, actually, I found that I noticed that the story and the setting in this game, since it was released, it's actually become a little more interesting and more culturally relevant. That, you know, in 2003 when it came out, we were all about the war on terror. And it was kind of quaint that Snake is fighting communists in Russia. And now here we are 10 years after it's been released, and North Korea is planning their nuclear arsenal, and suddenly nuclear weapons and communists are very relevant.
Right.
This week in particular.
Yeah.
How does the 3D work? Because, I mean, I played a little bit of Eurogamer a couple of years ago, and I could see that it would work very well because of the trees and that sort of thing. But I also felt that the game hadn't been built for 3D, and there was times when it didn't really suit.
Yeah, the 3D works best in the cutscenes, but when you're actually crawling around the jungle with a lot of things in the foreground in the distance, that's when you start getting that blur effect and double vision that the 3DS has. I usually turn that off when I'm in actual gameplay, and then switch back to 3D during the cutscenes.
Nice. You know,
like most 3DS games.
You know, there's been a lot of people who get bad headaches and things from the 3DS. Surprisingly, I've never had that problem, but I wonder if it's not because I have the 3DS XL. I think that might be a little bit easier on the eyes.
Get you with your new equipment.
Yeah, I say I have, but my son broke that, so I do not have that anymore. Oh, anything else you've been playing, Charles, or is that your main game for the moment?
Well, I've been going back through Tomb Raider and hunting down all the old stuff I missed during my first playthrough.
Oh, nice. How do you like Tomb Raider? I was a big fan. I believe Matt was a very big fan as well.
Well, I think that this Tomb Raider is a great thing for the current generation of consoles, because all the features that have been added in over the last 8 years of game development are present in this new Tomb Raider. It hasn't just brought the old gameplay from the old franchise into the modern day. It's actually taken everything that we've had from the modern day and put it into one game and done it all very well.
Right. At this point, I sort of feel like it's like the poster child for how you do a proper reboot. Devil May Cry was also quite good, I thought. But Tomb Raider really, to me, is kind of the one that stands out.
It's also a great way to reinvent a character. That there were a couple of older Tomb Raider games where they tried to show young Lara on her first adventure. But this one, it has that as the entire focus of the game. So you see this very long story arc where at the beginning the bad guys are like, get her, she's just some girl. And then about halfway through the game, then the villain starts screaming, she's got a grenade launcher, oh crap, run away.
That was a great moment. Oh,
if there's any developers listening and you want to know how to make great character progression, there you go. Give her a grenade launcher and have the enemies react.
I think that's an actual quote from one of the bad guys, right?
I believe it is.
Then by the end of the game, everyone's looking to Lara for leadership.
Right. Man, you're making me want to play this again. I'm playing Bioshock. Don't get me distracted. I have too many games I haven't played to go back and play games I have played. It's going to get me in trouble. All right, why don't we move on to Dio? What do you got playing currently?
Well, the biggest one I've been playing, and I just finished a couple of days ago, is Bioshock Infinite.
Okay, I need to say ahead of time, right now,
yeah.
No spoilers, nobody listening. Well, okay, everybody listening has probably finished this game. I haven't. So if you ruin anything, I will hunt you.
Just for the record, I was at Axol last weekend, so I didn't have any chance to gear up for this game, and I haven't even touched it yet.
All right, so see, Charles is off the hook. I know Matt's off the hook because he still hasn't played the original Bioshock, but it is you in the crosshairs.
No.
What?
In all fairness, I've finished the first level, so...
You make Ayn Rand cry.
I had to bring it up. Matt and I, we used to do a podcast. This is a little bit of a history lesson. Matt and I did a podcast like 3 years ago, and at that time, I was trying to get him to play Bioshock, and that game was old even then, and he wouldn't play it. And now, I assumed, coming into this, all right, he's played it by now. No, he still hasn't.
I own it. It's on my to-do list.
Anyway, so...
Okay, go on.
We can make fun of Matt all day, and
my verbal
we would run away from him.
Who has actually played Bioshock 2?
I have played Bioshock 2 also.
I own it.
I found the Minerva's Den DLC pack in that game. I found it to be just an exceptional piece of DLC.
You know, I don't know that I ever played that, sadly.
It is definitely worth picking up the whole game. Just so you can spend those 4 hours with Minerva Den. Not that the original game isn't terrific. I'm one of the few people that loved Bioshock 2 and Bioshock 1. But Minerva's Den is just a spectacular piece of DLC that they put out for that after releasing a bunch of mediocre DLC. So I think a lot of people just didn't play it.
Right, yeah. I might have to go back and try that. I also saw, I was almost kind of surprised to see that they've got 3 DLC packs planned for Infinite already. There's a season pass and everything. But have they released any information about what those might be? I mean, is it going to be different characters or a continuation of the same storyline we've been playing in the main game? I have no idea.
I saw a very brief summary which claims that it adds new characters and continues the story. So I don't have an official word on this from Irrational Games yet, but I think some of it will be single player.
Awesome.
But for those of you at home, that's just speculation.
Right. Okay, cool. Well, you know, they'll release info when they're going to release it. Probably not 1 second before they're properly ready. That seems to be Irrational's way. But I'll buy it. I bet you anything. I should just buy the season pass and save myself some money right now. Well, Dio seems to be having some trouble connecting here, so why don't we jump over to Matt instead for what you've been playing?
Okay, so the main thing that I was playing this week is a game called Evoland. And it's an indie title. It's available for pre-order on Steam. I forget the price. But it is kind of a love letter to the adventure genre. And how it starts off is that it's kind of like a Nintendo Entertainment System screen where the game starts and it's just a narrow stretch on the screen. And you only go right. And you go right and then you pick up the ability to go left. And then you pick up the ability to go in any direction. And you pick up more features for the game as you explore, including graphical upgrades and upgrades to the music. And it starts off very Zelda, and it goes into Final Fantasy and Diablo, right up until kind of modern RPGs. And it is just so well done. If you've ever played a classic Zelda game, if you've ever played... Oh shit, I've just realized this is an embargoed. We can edit this out.
We can edit this.
No, I'm not going to... You haven't... come on. You've given us the very basic... this is probably like the press release version of what this game is. So I don't think you've broken embargo on anything here.
I don't think this is going to go out before Monday anyway.
Yeah,
probably. If you go to Steam, there's a video playing of all of this.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So that's it's all pretty... Right. Yeah, you can figure most of that out just by looking at the video.
All right. I will not give my opinion on this game, but it is pretty good. It's worth watching the trailer.
Yeah, fair
that's
enough.
That's about it, really. I mean, I haven't had much time to look at things week. I'm trying to think what else I played. Tomb Raider. I've been trying to get through Tomb Raider. I played the vast majority of it, and I really enjoyed it. Charles touched on more or less everything that I'd noticed about it earlier, and I think what I'm enjoying most about it is that it's so Tomb Raider. A lot of people going into it were saying, "Oh, it's just Uncharted." They've tried to steal just everything that Uncharted does, and then just slap Tomb Raider on it. And I don't think that's the case. I think there's a lot there that's very, very Tomb Raider. Yeah, all right. There's not the hidden handhelds or the ropes that she doesn't hold on to, but apart from that, it's very, very Tomb Raider. Even down to the music, I thought, was quite similar to what we'd had in previous installments.
The music was brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, when you go into Raid a Doom, it plays that little burst of music from the first game.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure I picked up on that.
When you see an item, I know it happened at the beginning, and I can't say I've noticed it since, but when she comes across an item, there's that kind of like little... that used to play if she'd come across like a gun that was on the ground. It's just like, it's maybe three notes, it's maybe a set long sound effect, but I heard it there at the beginning. It may play throughout.
Hmm. Yeah, I haven't been like a Tomb Raider fan since way back, so all this stuff is kind of lost on me. I think I played, there was Tomb Raider Anniversary might be the only Tomb Raider game I ever spent any time playing, because the old ones, there's just the controls, I couldn't make myself do it.
Back when the PlayStation 1 controller only had a D-pad and no analog sticks.
Yeah, all the good old days.
Yeah, good in quotes.
Is that basically it, Matt, then? Are we ready to jump over to Dio and see what he's
got?
Yeah,
I've had a really boring week.
Yes, that I would say that is true. Although Evoland sounds great. I can't make a judgment on it because I haven't played it. But, you know, I would like to play it from your description. That's enough to hook me. All right, let's have Dio. Okay, right, you're back. So what have you been playing? But yeah, obviously BioShock.
Yeah, sorry,
we've had a discussion about this.
He kicked me out because I was about to review something.
Yeah, go ahead.
But jokes aside, it was just no words to describe how amazing it was. It's like the culmination of everything of this generation just packed into one game.
What platform are you playing it on, if I can ask?
PlayStation 3.
Okay, so you are playing it on the console.
I hear the PC version is... Yeah.
Yeah, the PC version, I guess, is supposed to be the greatest thing that has ever happened. I'm just playing it on 360 also, and I expected, based on the reviews, the 360 version to not look that good, And then when I loaded it up, I thought, these people are crazy. I feel like I'm glad I haven't seen it on PC, because this looks great.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So,
but it's...
Yeah, how are you finding it?
Gameplay is awesome. The collectibles is classic Bioshock, kind of finding voxophones and scouring every cranny for, like, the silver eagles and the money and everything.
Right. My favorite thing, I was excited right away when I started playing that game because of... When an objective pops up, it plays that same little doo-doo-doo noise that it would play in the original Bioshock. I can't do it, but you know what I mean. And I was like, yes!
Yeah, yeah. It's really connected to the original Bioshock. I'll give you that much.
Yeah, the similarities that they just sort of... It's just little things, but it's definitely... It's not like something they just slapped the Bioshock name on to get a few extra dollars out of it. They put the time in, I feel like, to really make this a spiritual sequel, or prequel, I guess is probably a better word.
Well, like, the complete environment from the whole of Colombia is just absolutely gorgeous.
I agree. When you first load it up, and you arrive at the city, and you can just see the whole, you've got the Monument Island thing, the big statue of the angel in the background, mm-hmm. and the prophet, oh man, it's good. If you're not playing this game, why are you not playing it? It is so good.
Exactly.
I was just about to say that I'm really looking forward to being able to in about 2018. That's my current plan.
It is more accessible than the original Bioshock, I'll give you that though.
I think Matt will be better off with this one because he couldn't play the first one because he doesn't do horror games well. And there's elements of it in Bioshock Infinite, certainly, but it's a lot more... It doesn't feel foreboding in quite the same way, at least not up to the point that I'm at. It's a welcoming place, and then all of the horrible stuff is kind of just below the surface.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree with that.
So
Bioshock 1 did a great job of, like having you... dreading what's around the corner and this and that, but all of Colombia is really big. You can literally go anywhere and just do stuff to enemies. Non-sexual, of course.
You almost had me buy in this game. And then you had to ruin it with non-sexual.
That's how you sell Matt on a game right there. He wants violence, he wants sex. No horror, though.
Of course, I could have spoke about Scott Blade. The game I forgot.
That's worth coming around to. I think you need to mention it for people.
I think I've been trying to think of a good metaphor for how uncomfortable I felt and playing this game. Basically what it is, it's an MMORPG from Area Games, and it's just a regular MMORPG. You kill random things because someone tells you to. I need 10 batteries, and they're in that robot. Go and kill 10. And then the next mission is go and kill 20. And that repeats and repeats and repeats. But here's the hook for the game. All the women, the only characters you can play as are women, and they don't really wear any clothes. If you'd pre-ordered it, don't wear any clothes at all. But that's the hook for the game. That's the hook for the game. And I've been trying to think, it is like the most uncomfortable thing ever.
I've been trying to think about this game. He told me about this game the other day, so I had to look it up, and I saw on a website or two, it was billed as the first ever MMO that you can play one-handed.
Wow, women's rights have had a really bad week for the gaming industry. Like people have been resigning from the IGDA all week because of some party that had a bunch of half-naked go-go dancers. And at PAX East, there was a member of the, quote, gaming media who was harassing girls dressed like Lara Croft.
So why did you do that,
Charlie?
And now
this thing launches.
And this game, this Scarlet Blade, it is so surreal because no one really mentions the fact that you're buying weaponry off women with their tits. There's no mention of it. It's just, like, completely straight. It is so unusual. And the only metaphor I think of is, imagine that you're running through a field of boobs and your that is looking over your shoulder while you do it. That is the only description for how uncomfortable this game feels while you're playing it.
Oh, that's excellent.
But aside from that, it's pretty good. Aside from the fact that you feel dirty, as if you're looking through a hole in the wall and watching... young girls undress. Aside from that, it's a 10 out of 10.
creepier by the description.
Yeah. This sounds like a game that I don't ever, ever want to play.
I think I'll
your wife is going to listen to this podcast, right?
Yes.
That's why you're saying that.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Wink.
It's a ruse. Do people who get really into this game not know that Google exists? I feel like for no money, you could have a similar experience.
The weird thing was, it was like the most civil MMO I had ever been in. I went in expecting kind of the internet equivalent of old men in Macs who stand outside of schools. And it was like, there seemed to be two genders, and they were just getting on. I think that the answer to all of the games industry's sexism problems just make more games with nudity in. Because if this game is anything to go by, everyone was getting on, everyone was polite. It was fantastic from that point of view. It was
maybe it's
so
just
strange.
A pickup scene for a certain type of person.
Maybe.
Well,
possible.
I feel like we kind of interrupted Dio there with
yeah,
to talk
sorry,
about breasts.
I thought about it. I had to talk about it, and I'm losing my train of conversation now just thinking about it. No problem.
He's getting overwhelmed again. He's gonna load it back up. This is why he's not playing BioShock. He's too busy playing Scarlet Blade.
Great choice.
Like you, Dio, I have also been playing BioShock Infinite. In fact, I didn't get to play it until about 10 o'clock last night. I have two young children, and when my wife saw me grab a man by the throat with the skyhook and tear his head off, she decided that I would not be playing that in front of the children. So I waited until they were asleep, and I played it until about 2 a.m. when my 360 controller died, and I didn't have any more batteries for it. So that was the only reason I stopped playing that game last night. I could be in worse shape this morning than I am, but thankfully or horribly, depending on your perspective, my batteries in the controller died. So I'm going to have to steal some out of Tickle Me Elmo or some stupid thing that my children own.
Like, a rational game should just put that whole quote on the back of the box when they release the Game of the Year edition.
Yeah, and there is going to be a Game of the Year edition.
Oh, for sure. Hey, if they want me to put a quote on the back, if anybody wants a quote on the back of the box to put my name, I'll say whatever you want. I mean, just feed me the line, and I'll say it. I want to see my name in lights.
Because we're all about professional ethics here at Games.
Yeah,
Reviews.
Right. nothing says integrity like Joe Ryan. I can't really speak too much about it. I've only played a couple hours. It's good. It's BioShock, but better in pretty much every respect. So if you liked BioShock, if you like thinking about your games BioShock rather than just murdering, there's really no reason you should not be playing it.
Yeah, it was just wait until the ending. You're going to be completely blown.
I sit there the whole time. For 2 minutes after this game started, I'm sitting there going, okay, maybe this is what's going to happen. Maybe that's what's going to happen. And if I were to guess it, I would feel so smart, but I would also be kind of let down because I'm hoping it's nothing I could ever have dreamed.
It's the latter of the sentence.
Yes. So excited. I'm just going to stay up all night tonight and play it. I'll steal all the batteries from my children's toys.
Right, so it doesn't turn out that Booker is Elizabeth's real father. ...
I feel
yeah,
like
I think it's
going
to be hysterical listening to this. It's like, I think it'll be hysterical listening to this a week from now after I've played the game. And
I feel like we've pretty much done everything, all the main bits of what we've been playing, and I know Matt is very, very excited to talk about The Phantom Pain and Metal Gear 5, so why don't you break that down?
Well, it's kind of funny because at the end of last year at the Games Awards, they showed a trailer for The Phantom Pain. And all the PR, you know, NAMI were allegedly at the event wearing T-shirts for The Phantom Pain. And people were saying, so it's a Metal Gear game. And they were all stood there straight-faced going, no, it's really not. Not a Phantom Pain. It's not a Metal Gear game. Look at the trailer and the first thing you think of is that's Snake, that's Big Boss. This is definitely a Metal Gear game. And they've kept up this ruse for 6 months little less than that, 4 months. And now they've said, actually, it was Metal Gear, and everyone already knew it was Metal Gear. But now that it's official, it feels like it's a new reveal. So it's really unusual that we've all known Metal Gear Solid 5 was on the way, and that the Phantom Pain really was Metal Gear Solid 5, and now it is. So even though the trailer had a lot of things from that original trailer, everyone's suddenly gone, absolutely, you know, they've got really excited about it. And I can see why. There's a lot of good things in there. It's very Metal Gear. It's very over the top. There's references to Ocelot, to Psychomantis, to Volgin. It really seems like this is going to be one of the games that ties everything up. They tried it with 4, and it was a lot of references. There was a lot of talking about things that happened a long time ago. A lot of talking. 8 hours worth of talking about what happened a long time ago. And this time it seems like they're kind of going to try and get together to join up Big Boss and Snake's Adventure. And, of course, there's Kiefer Sutherland in as well. Or I don't think it's been confirmed, but anyone with ears can tell that it is. Or at least someone doing a decent impression.
Right. Well, here's something I wanted to touch on the podcast. Matt and I talked about this the other day, and I'm wondering why Japan feels the need to do this thing where they say, here's a game, and they show you a trailer, and they tell you it's some game that it isn't, and then 6 months later they go, actually, that's not the game you thought. This is a better game or something. Like, what do they gain?
I think the fun of it is that everyone knew it was a Metal Gear game. There is no, you know, they'd shown the trailer for Ground Zeroes, and even the way that he ran, or the clothes that he was wearing at certain parts in the Phantom Pain trailer were the same as in the Ground Zeroes trailer. So everyone knew that it was Metal Gear. And I think that's part of the fun, because they just could keep it up, and keep saying, Kojima could keep saying, I've seen it, and it looks very similar, but it's nothing to do with us. And I think that's, it just got people mad, because it was just like, admit it. When he was releasing pictures that had TPP on, and he was editing a trailer, he knew that everyone was going to see it and say, he's editing a trailer for The Phantom Pain.
So you think that this is, you know, a conspiracy that goes to the highest level? Like, they consider every move, they release things purposely just to go, okay, we want them to know what it is, but we don't want to tell them what it is, and then when we officially tell them what it is, they'll be excited a second time.
It's free publicity. It gets them months of wild speculation and people talking about their product.
I think, yeah. That seems true. I think you are 100% right. But the other question I had about that was, for Metal Gear, that's fine, okay? But there's another game they've announced for PS4 that they're currently calling Deep Down, and it's Dragon's Dogma 2, and everybody knows that. But I'm the only one in the world who cared about Dragon's Dogma 1, so when they reveal that, it's going to do nothing for anyone. So I feel like they might be barking up the wrong tree with that one. Anyway, while we were speaking about Metal Gear, Matt, why don't you tell us why Metal Gear 3 is not the best? I just want to hear it one more time, and then I'll tell you why the story of the boss is so much better than anything else in Metal Gear. All right, I don't want to get into this. Never mind.
What, just in case I've got the perfect explanation and I convert you?
No, I feel like, I mean, how many times have you had this discussion? It's been years now. It's never going to happen.
I just want to clarify that I don't think that Metal Gear Solid 3 is the worst, and I don't think it's even a bad game. I do feel that going back in time was necessary, but that it kind of screwed over the people that were following it for a long time.
Do you think that the Phantom Pain game is going to make you appreciate 3 more now that it's presumably going to be a continuation of the events from 3?
I mean, I played Double Ops and I played Peace Walker. Both were decent games. And compared to Metal Gear Solid 3, they weren't that great, but they had their moments. So I already appreciate 3 for what it's doing for the overall franchise. But with that said, Metal Gear Solid 1 was fantastic. 2 was a great continuation. Not only the story, but they built upon the gameplay as well. And 3, they built upon the gameplay, but kind of like if there's a book franchise that you love, all of a sudden, you know, there's a chapter out of nowhere that doesn't deal with any of the characters you know. It doesn't deal with any of the events that have happened in the previous books. All it's doing is setting up chapters, except stretch that 13 hours. And it was a good standalone story, but it was just that. It was a standalone story.
I guess that's fair enough, even though, I mean, on its own, it was better than the entire rest of the nonsense they've tried to come up with combined. That's all I'm saying. what other exciting news has happened this week? I know there's a couple things you mentioned, and now I slipped my mind entirely.
The last DLC for Rock Band, it's the end of an era. End of the plastic instrument.
It really feels that way now, doesn't it? I mean, I haven't played Rock Band in years, but just something about the fact that all of a sudden they've done, I mean, they've had a weekly update every week since the original one launched. Is that right?
It's been about 4 years, yeah.
I don't know. Man.
What was the name of the last song?
The last song was American
Pie. Yeah, American Pie by Don McLean. I think was one of their most requested songs or something like that. There was a time in my life where anytime I went to someone's house, there was going to be Rock Band or Guitar Hero or something. Like, you couldn't have a group of 2-3 people without breaking that game out. And it's like, now that they're not updating it anymore, it really feels official. Like, that the time of plastic instruments is done.
The end of an era. Yeah.
I never actually jumped into the plastic instrument trend that came and went. I'm utterly not inclined toward music in any way. And I remember when, you know, the first Rock Band game was on its way, I thought, no one's ever going to play that.
I would like to know how much money they have made on DLC over these years.
It's that's why they resigned now. They just got everything out of consumers.
Yeah.
I think it got to the point where, because I mean, the last year as DLC has been crap. It has been pretty terrible. There's been good weeks, but I don't think I've bought anything since about November 2011. What year is it? 2011. And
we
want to say it's
the
early
distant future of 2013, if you could believe it.
Sometimes I don't. That's the problem. Yeah, I think the last thing I bought was they released a Queen pack at the end of 2011. I think that was the last thing I bought. And there was the odd thing for the last 12 months, but never anything that I thought, well, I'm going to stick a fiver in the PlayStation store to buy just one song.
Yeah.
So they would definitely been winding up for more than 12 months now. Definitely been getting to the point.
Is that how it works in England? You can slide a £5 note into the PlayStation itself.
You can.
That's a $200 add-on that you have to buy for the PlayStation. Sony sells it directly from their store, and then you can just conveniently slide your cash in.
Yeah, because I've been sticking quarters into my Xbox, and that's not getting me anywhere.
Oh man. I feel like there should have been some big things going on this week. You know what I want to talk about, actually, news-wise, this will be of interest to probably just me, is the fact that XCOM Enemy Unknown, best game that came out last year, is coming, the full version, to iOS, so I can play that on my iPad now, which is super exciting, because that game was like my game of the year for last year. I love XCOM.
Never got the chance to play it.
The question that everyone is asking is how much it's going to be. Because
it's
a full title.
It's going to be expensive. It's going to be really expensive.
People are reckoning that it's going to be... Yeah.
And that raises the question, are mobile gamers going to spend $40 for a game? Now, this is a group of people that are outraged when they're asked to spend $10 for a game.
I hesitate if it's one. Maybe that's just me.
99 cents is the cutting off point.
In a perfect world... they will hear this, and they will know what a big fan I am, and I will get a copy for my iPad absolutely free. So maybe it won't be such an issue. Whatever it is, it'll take some convincing to get my wife to let me spend some huge amount of money on a game for iPad, but I will probably do it, because that game is exceptional. If you haven't played XCOM, you really have to be sort of into the whole hardcore turn-based strategy thing, but it's really worth it.
Is it at all like... the closest example I can think of is maybe Disgaea, however it's pronounced.
I don't think I've even played any Disgaea games, sadly. It reminds me a bit of, it's Space Age Fire Emblem, where if you get your guys killed, they're dead forever. That's it.
All right. The new one, Awakening, is absolutely brilliant, if anybody's played it.
That was one of those games I really wanted to play. Yeah, that was one of those. These strategy games, they really set me in.
I actually find myself staying away from like tactical RPGs and turn-based strategy just because I know I will spend 100 hours playing Fire Emblem, and I need my precious, precious life.
Do we have any other exciting news? Anyone wants to bring up something that happened this week, maybe, or the last couple weeks that you think is worth mentioning?
Trying to think.
Well, when I was at the Penny Arcade Expo, I got my grubby mitts on Dead Island Riptide.
Oh, I have to hear
How did
about
you
this.
find it?
Yeah, it's we played a short level where we got to build fortified defenses around an area and fight off the zombie horde. And in Riptide, that's not a separate mode or anything. You just go through levels and you'll reach places where you get to build these little fortifications, and then the zombies come, and then the linear story will take off after that.
That sounds awesome.
How
I
does it
was a
compare
big
to the?
fan of the first one.
I was just going to say, how does it compare to the original? Because I played it, and mission structure was just—it was almost MMO-like and quite dry, I found, for that reason.
You really have to enjoy, if to like
Well,
Dead Island, you have to run like running and jumping and kicking a zombie's face and then slashing his head off when he's laying on the ground helpless. And I really enjoy that. I really enjoy
and the crafting, being able to make that special meat cleaver, that's your special meat cleaver that has electricity and poison.
that. Despite the fact that that makes no sense.
Or.
Despite
I'm probably alone on this, but I was not a big fan of the first one.
No, me.
I
I
don't
like
think you're
killing
alone on that.
zombies.
I think I was the only
Yeah.
one who was a big fan.
Okay, in that case.
But then again, I absolutely loved BU, and then I went online and everyone was telling me that I should hate it, so difficult to judge.
What other exciting
Oh,
things
Saints
happened
Row
at
4
PAX?
was announced just over. Yeah, we got our first look at Saints Row 4, which
Oh, of course, yeah.
was. So for those of you who love the Saints Row franchise, Saints Row 4 was a something that we always knew existed, but to have it suddenly announced and then actually see the footage of it, it's come along quite nicely from
But
a title that was kept.
it was pretty touch and go anyway, but it was going to be DLC, and then they updated it to a full-fledged sequel, and then THQ died, and within weeks of THQ disappearing, suddenly there's a trailer, and you just think, well, why didn't we have the trailer? I mean, maybe it was down to the fact that THQ knew that they were on the way out. Perhaps if the game was in a place where it just, okay, we've got a trailer.
Possibly, yeah.
Now, I
Yeah, it's.
remember right before THQ went under, they had the Humble Bundle and the Steam sale, and people bought millions of copies of their games, and that still didn't save the company.
Right. Yeah, it's. I
But
don't
it,
know. It's
yeah.
depressing to see these game companies that keep falling apart, especially when they're ones that have some franchises and things that are really good. Like, I was excited to see on the news tip that somebody, I think it's Crytek maybe or something, that's hopefully picking up the rights to Darksiders. Because those games are great. I really like those, but man, hopefully somebody continues the series.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I was going to
Crytek.
mention Darksiders.
Yeah, Crytek also. I think they picked up the next Homeland game.
Right.
Though that's a couple of THQ franchises that are going over to them.
I feel like they're probably in good hands. I thought I heard that Crytek also picked up a lot of the employees from THQ, so maybe it'll be sort of the same people at the helm.
It was a little weird,
It was a little
actually, with
weird.
THQ going under, because there was just this kind of, there was Kickstarters up because people wanted to buy franchises that no one's heard of for 20 years.
Right.
And, things like that. It was just like, going to a Hertz jumble sale or something and watching all these people trying to pick at absolutely everything that the company has ever done. And this was months before the actual auctions. And it was,
Wow.
everyone wanted a piece of it. Everyone wanted, okay, we've got to save this
Gotta save
franchise.
this.
How are we going to do it? Let's start a Kickstarter. And it was interesting to watch, but it was also quite sad.
Maybe we should have bought the rights to some obscure THQ game.
Yeah.
I am just desperately
I'm
waiting for a Crash Bandicoot game.
You are the only one that's ever used that phrase.
I enjoy the game
Man.
so much.
I'm just waiting for Punky Skunk Kart Racing.
Yes.
Oh, man. Anything else? Anything else? Exciting?
No,
news?
I love Crash.
We could talk about how much Dio loves Crash. That's sort of topical.
On a DLC note we were talking about before, I was very disappointed to find out that the Tomb Raider DLC was only going to be limited to multiplayer.
I think I speak for a lot of gamers when, you know, when I say, Tomb Raider has multiplayer?
So yeah, exactly, from that, like such a single player story-driven experience, and then suddenly to tell everyone, okay, you know what, just wait for the next game in the franchise and in the series, I mean, and then just play multiplayer till then, which is non-existent, basically.
Imagine a village full of Lara Crofts just ping around and grunting.
Well, that's my perfect dream.
I already played that game's called Scarlet Blade, Matt. You already played it.
That game has no sound effects. It diminishes the experience.
You're meant to be making your own. It's just the heavy breathing through the microphones that you hear.
BioShock 2 had this. BioShock 2 had this tacked-on multiplayer mode that it became a complete ghost town after it was released, and they were still putting out DLC for it. That if you bought it, you would still not be able to play it because you couldn't find a single match.
Yeah.
I was very enthusiastic about BioShock 2 multiplayer for a round and a half, and then I went, why am I doing this?
I think it happened a lot with Space 2 as well. I can't speak personally, I never really played it, but I know that it had a pretty harsh learning curve, and the only people playing it were the people that kicked ass.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of games that end up like that. If you're not Call of Duty or Halo, I mean, how long did Uncharted... People probably still play a little bit of Uncharted multiplayer, but that's a pretty big name too. There's a lot of these games where it's like, people are already invested. They've got their game that they play every night, and that's the game they're going to play, and that's it.
But I'm excited for the idea that Metal Gear Solid 5 is probably going to have an online mode of some sort, because Metal Gear Online 2 was just awesome. It went wrong, but it started out fantastic.
If they could be creative with it, such as like games like Mass Effect, and if they can incorporate multiplayer well, then go for it, I say.
Yeah, definitely. Mass Effect got a pretty bad rap, but that was mainly because people didn't understand what EA were trying to sell through the microtransactions. They thought that they were going to come across players that were going to beat them because they'd spent money, but all it was skipping some of the hard work, really. And I think a lot of people didn't get because of that, because they were worried that people who paid were going to win, typically.
Hmm. I quite enjoyed the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I was one of the people saying, this can't possibly be any good. And then I actually, when I finally played it, when the beta was running, I really enjoyed it, and I was surprised by that.
I was disappointed that because of my terrible satellite internet connection, I wasn't able to even try the multiplayer part at all. And I think because of that, because I couldn't play the multiplayer, I was barred from getting the best ending. Like, I thought I had read that unless you can get some war resources or whatever it was from multiplayer, even if you do everything perfectly in a single-player game, you will not have enough to get the best ending, which I thought was foolish.
The fantastic thing about Mass Effect 3 is that you can just half-ass the single-player and still get the best ending, because there's no such thing.
You are all going to hate me for this, but I quite enjoyed the ending.
I had no problem with the ending.
Done in silence.
For what it was, I was like, okay, that's the ending, whatever, fine, I'm good.
I didn't expect anything because of months and months of telling me it was going to be terrible, but they decided to do something with it that wasn't very smart. They decided that your last choice was going to change everything. And in a game that is, over 100 hours long, if you do everything, I mean the franchise, over three games, you have invested 100 hours, and then everything comes down to one tiny decision, and that's it.
I remember
I
was
well, people got mad.
There was a part on a forum I was on or something where somebody said, you're definitely going to want to check this post out. And it was a post on the official Mass Effect forums, and I think it was posted like within a week of Mass Effect 2 coming out, and people had already beaten it, and they were getting hyped up for Mass Effect 3. And one guy specifically said, there's no way they can ruin the ending. And he said something like, as long as it's not just you walk up and they give you three choices of which lever to pull and then you pull it and it's over, it's going to be the greatest ending of all time. And that is exactly what happened.
Wow. I just thought because
well,
I was...
In BioWare's defense... in BioWare's defense, if you were to make a chart of every story-based choice your character can make over the course of the three games, you'd have your entire wall covered with this huge flowchart of possible ending choices. So, they had to simplify it. They couldn't factor in every character that could have died or might have become a lover, and factoring in every good and evil choice that you could have made, you'd have, you know, 1,024 different possible endings by the end of it.
I like the idea that the developers were trying to get around this blunder, one that you just said, the wall and everything, and then they just came across this on the official BioWare forums, and suddenly everything made sense. Let's just have three levers, and that guy hates himself now, I bet.
Yeah, I at the time, but, I mean, like Matt said, I was just expecting something so horrible that I did it, and I was like, oh, that's not that big of a deal. And then, like I always do, I went on the internet to hear other people's reactions and everything, and everybody will think I'm weird or whatever, but I read about that people had
outraged.
That theory of indoctrination where they were like, the whole ending bit isn't real. He was just being indoctrinated or whatever, and then after the credits, you see him take a breath, and that's him waking up to continue the fight or something. I was like, this sounds good. There was like a 20-minute YouTube video where some guy laid out all the proof for three games or whatever about why he thought the ending wasn't real. It was just Shepard fighting Reaper control in his mind, basically. And I was like, this is great. I hope this is what happened. And then I think that with them changing
Shepard.
The ending, that officially is not the case.
Shepard
like
just wakes up back
twist.
On Eden Prime.
Yeah.
All over again.
That would be even worse.
So it's fighting the Reapers for real this time. We've just prepared you.
I'm okay with it. I'm
perfectly
happy with it.
Mass Effect 4.
Well, do we have anything else to touch on before we wrap this thing up?
I think that's everything, isn't it?
I kind of imagine it probably is. I'm sure everyone who's listening, if anyone's listening, let's be honest, it's probably like, oh, they're talking over each other in the lag, and it's terrible. But give me a break. It's our first go. Eventually, we're going to lock down the dynamic. It's going to be great. I promise you. Stick around for, like, I don't know, 20, 30 more episodes. And I promise.
That's only 30 hours of your life.
That's like three,
that's only
three quarters
around
of a year
away.
If you're not going to listen to this show for at least a year before you expect it to be good, then maybe you should just go right now. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay, I'm out.
But you're going to edit out all the mistakes we've made, right?
Yeah. Hopefully. I'm going to do my best.
Bring us back into the studio so that we... so that we won't do this where we're talking over each other.
Yes. In theory, there will be less of that in the finished version. Of course, if you're hearing all of it right now as you listen to it, then that means I didn't edit anything. I just figured, let them have it.
The great thing is, we're going to leave in the bit where you said, are you going to edit out all the mistakes? And people are going to be saying, what mistakes? They were doing so well. And then we're going to look really awful. Really.
So
that's a grand
edit
idea.
That bit out. And then
everything
edit this, what I'm saying right now.
Yeah, there we go. We've got a...
All right, then. I guess that'll wrap it up for the first episode of the Games Reviews Podcast. Thank you for joining me, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Hopefully we'll be recording another one next week. Until then, we are out.
Cool.